Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. And you may be reading in the papers, there's a lot of Supreme Court cases that have just come down, a lot of opinions that have just been issued. That's not a coincidence. The Supreme Court, according to statute, begins the first Monday in October, and traditionally they end at the end of June. And so all those opinions that have been lying around, they gotta get out. Time for summer vacation. Time to get those opinions out. And so there have been a lot of opinions that have just come down. And as a lawyer who has focused on the Constitution for a large part of my career, I want to talk about these opinions. I haven't had a chance to read all of them, but I might be able to give you some insight into what all these opinions are saying. Of course, the most important opinion, the most, at least in my view, the most powerful thing that the court ruled was a ruling 8-1 that you cannot hold people indefinitely without due process, without a trial, without the right to an attorney. The Bush administration had an extreme arrogance with regard to this position that has never been taken before in American history. And we'll explain. Well, I'll give historical examples and why I think that the Bush's position was more extreme than Abraham Lincoln's during the Civil War or during the McCarthy era. And we'll talk about that. But the heart of it is that George Bush basically thought he had a waiver for the United States Constitution. And he felt that the Bill of Rights, notwithstanding, he could hold people he called enemy combatants, including two American citizens, by the way, forever, indefinitely, without trial, without access to a lawyer, without access to due process, without anyone able to say, hello, I'm not the guy that you thought you had. You wanted Ahmed Alibi and I'm Ahmed Kalibi, whatever it is, via people who are innocent, who are in prison. And in fact, just as the Red Cross found 70-90% of prisoners in Iraq to be innocent, even a CIA officer at military intelligence has reported that 20% at least in his estimate of the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay are completely innocent of anything terrorist related. And yet we have imprisoned them. We have tortured them. We do not allow them to have a counsel, to have a lawyer. And some say that this is justified because, after all, there are terrorists out to kill Americans. We know what happened on September 11th. Some say this is justified and we cannot second guess the president. Whatever he says is right. Only one justice accepted that view, and that was Clarence Thomas. All eight others, including Justice Scalia even, was horrified at the Bush administration's position that he can hold forever, indefinitely, American citizens and others without a lawyer, without trial. And we're going to go into some of the detail of that opinion and why it really is a violation. The Bush practice, I should say, is a violation of longstanding precedent that dates back to the Magna Carta, even, that wonderful promise by King John of Britain in 1215 that Justice Scalia, in fact, mentioned. So I want to talk about that, but that's not the only thing that came down from the Supreme Court. There's a lot of other very interesting things. When the Bush administration did not go so far off the deep end, so far that even the court that installed him in power was a little bit afraid, I think, of the monster that they created. I think they are beginning to understand now that if you create a president without using the election process, without using the legal or constitutional process, that this is a president who doesn't have to rely on democracy or the Constitution or checks and balances. And so he's going to go out and just claim rights that no president has ever claimed before. I think they're starting to worry about the monster they created. But outside of that extraordinary event that Bush claimed, a lot of other Supreme Court opinions that have come down, and I want to see how many we can discuss in the hour we have before us. One is that you can't sue your HMO. Now, this may surprise a lot of you. We'll talk about that. You cannot sue your health maintenance organization. They can leave a scalpel inside you. Tough luck. Just going to have to live with that scalpel. Hope it doesn't cut out your heart while you're walking around. They've also found that, and obviously I'm not a big fan of that opinion, nor am I a fan of the opinion that says that Dick Cheney doesn't have to disclose who he worked with on his energy commission. Basically, the Supreme Court punted that one. They knocked it back to the lower court. The heart of that opinion, though, is that before the election, Cheney doesn't have to tell the American people what it was he was doing basically allowing, my understanding is, though I don't know, Cheney won't disclose the documents. I think they must be even worse than my understanding if he won't disclose them. But basically allowing Enron and other energy companies to get whatever they wanted in the law, to get all kinds of benefits. We know in the past, for example, that Tom DeLay, the Republican majority leader, allowed polluters to come into his office and just write the bills, write whatever legislation they wanted to increase their profits, no matter how much they polluted. Well, the Supreme Court kicked it back. This is, of course, the case that Justice Scalia refused to recuse himself on when he went duck hunting with Dick Cheney. And it just strikes me, can you imagine how conservatives would have had a fit? Remember when – you probably don't remember this. You may. Hillary Clinton and her health task force also argued this should be secret. The court ruled no, she had to disclose, and she did. And now this precedent that Democrats have to disclose who's on their task forces apparently isn't the same when Republicans have to do the same. The same is true with gerrymandering. Gerrymandering, of course, is the art of drawing political lines, the art of basically crowding all your opponents' supporters in one small district or two or three small districts, and that way you have the right to more power. Let me explain how it works. Let's say you have a place like Texas, and let's say that Austin is a fairly liberal city in Texas. So instead of letting Austin have one or two liberal Democratic representatives, now what you're going to do is you're going to split Austin into five pieces, put little pieces of Austin into overwhelmingly Republican rural districts, and that way Austin gets no representative. And if you gerrymander just right, as the Republicans have done now in Texas and Florida and Pennsylvania and Colorado, what you do is you can take a state like Florida, which is 50-50. We know that from the election. Only slightly more people voted for Gore than Bush in Florida in 2000. They have two Democratic senators, Republican governor. This is a state, you know, pretty much split down the middle. But 72%, almost three-quarters of the representatives are Republican. Because what they do is they put all the blacks in one district. Even if they have to draw the district way out into the ocean for hundreds of miles, slip in, grab a black neighborhood, go back out for hundreds of miles, and they draw these crazy lines. If you ever want to know what gerrymandering is, just take a look at Florida's congressional district, or Texas's, or Pennsylvania's. And so they draw these crazy lines, and they do it so that the Democratic districts have 90%, 95% Democrats in them, but they only get one vote. And then you get many other districts that have 60% Republicans in it, and they get many votes. And I hope I've been clear here. It's a little complicated mathematically. If I haven't made it clear, call in. I'll be happy to explain in detail. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. But gerrymandering is an old American political tradition. It dates back to Governor Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts, who drew a district shaped like a salamander to protect his party at the time. And that's where the word gerrymander came from. It actually came from a political cartoon. But at this point, the parties are going too far. They use computers to these very, very sophisticated systems to really deny democracy. And if you have any doubt that gerrymandering denies democracy or that the Republicans are mostly the cause of it, just look back to the election of 2000. Al Gore, of course, won a majority of the American people who voted for Bush or Gore, and he beat Bush by more than 500,000 votes. In other words, he doubled almost Carter's victory over Ford and tripled Nixon's victory over Humphrey or Kennedy's victory over Nixon. It was a good margin where Gore beat Bush. But he only got about 42% of the districts. So he gets 51% of the population to vote for Gore or Bush and only 42% of the congressional districts, while Bush gets 58%. How do they do this undemocratically? Through the process of gerrymandering. Why am I bringing all this up on a Supreme Court show? Because the Supreme Court, which rejected any challenges to the Republican gerrymander in Texas, rejected challenges to the Republican gerrymander in Pennsylvania, struck down the Democrats' attempt to do the exact same thing in Georgia, saying that, well, that the districts weren't even enough. But what's interesting to me is how political this means. It means that when Democrats try to stoop to the same tactics that Republicans have stooped to, these undemocratic tactics, as a way of just sort of getting even, the court throws it out. So this is by no means a court I'm happy with. I am glad, though, that John Ashcroft can't knock on my door today, declare me an enemy combatant, and put me in Guantanamo Bay without a trial. There were other cases that came up. There's a case on internet porn. Very interesting, really. Congress, again, mostly Republicans, but far too many Democrats, voted on a bill to make it very difficult to access internet porn. And they say they're doing this to protect the children. But we're going to discuss this opinion also at length. I think it's a good opinion and a very bad law by Congress. You know, if adults want to see pornography, let them see pornography. And I think the court exposed what was really going on here. They say it's to protect the children, but really it's fundamentalist Christians, Jews, Muslims, fundamentalist religions basically wanting to prevent Americans from seeing pornography. And you know what? If you don't want to see porn, don't look at it. But stop trying to control everyone else's views. What else? We got a case that said that foreigners have a limited right to sue in the United States for acts done abroad. That would be things like torture, and I think that's a good thing. The administration was against that. I guess they're afraid that Iraqis will come to U.S. courts and start suing us for Abu Ghraib prison. But it is a good case. Anyway, there are all these cases to talk about, and I want to encourage you to call in. What case do you feel is the most important? How did any of these cases affect you? Or any other case that I haven't mentioned. The number's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Maybe you have a case that you want some more insight in, and I'll try to give that to you, into why the court ruled the way it did or some of the logic of the court decision. I, as a lawyer, one of the things we have to do is interpret the Supreme Court decisions, and I've been doing that all my legal career. My most famous, of course, is the Supreme Court decision in Bush v. Gore, largely because I think it's the worst decision in American history. So call in 877-577-2667, 877-57-SCOOP, or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Let's talk about the Supreme Court's various decisions and what you think about them. And I also want to encourage you to contribute to my blog. I've been getting a lot of blog attention lately. And it's made for a great discussion. All you do is you go to radioinsidescoop.com, www.radioinsidescoop.com, and you can click, you can make a comment on today's show, you can make a comment on past shows, you can make a comment on future shows, and we get into some lively debates online. I participate in some of them. Lately, we've been having some really good debates, and I want to encourage you to do that, too. Another thing about my blog is it's got archives of past shows. Maybe you didn't hear the show with Craig Unger, who was on Michael Moore's movie. He was on my show first, where he talked about how we let the Saudis out right after September 11th. Maybe you missed the show about how they're trying to manipulate the election rolls in Florida yet again. Or the show with Sybil Edmonds on how they're spies in the FBI. Or the threats to our homeland security. Or just the debates that I have every week on Election Tuesday with usually Republicans. One time there's a debate with Nader you can find in the archives. Check out the archives because feel free to contribute to the blog. As far as I'm concerned, these are ongoing conversations that continue. And my listeners know I always encourage you to bring it on because I really think debate is important, both with those you agree and those you don't agree. So we have to go to commercial break. I know there's some callers already on the line. That's terrific. Hang on. If you want to join in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And when we come back, we'll take your calls and discuss the recent opinions of the United States Supreme Court right after this.
I'm suffering from Reagan exhaustion. Greek gods did not get the glorification that Ronald Reagan has been getting since his death. He's already gotten a king-like 7-day funeral and a tsunami of worshipful media coverage. And now, the full deification of the Gipper is proceeding apace, with Republican politicos openly engaged in idolatry. Believe it or not, they're pushing to have Ronnie's face carved into Mount Rushmore, to off Alexander Hamilton from the $10 bill and replace him with Reagan's likeness, to name still more big government facilities in Washington after Reagan, to make his birthday a national holiday, and to name at least one thing after Reagan in every one of America's 3,067 counties. A little perspective, please. It would be appropriate, for example, to erect a statue on the Mall and inscribe it, Ronald Reagan, the man who gave us Saddam Hussein. Yes, for 5 years, Reagan provided aid and all sorts of weaponry to build up Saddam and his military might, arming the Iraqi thug for his war against Iran. And yes, that's the same Iran that Ronnie's White House basement troll, Ollie North, sold arms to in order to finance Reagan's secret, illegal war against Nicaragua's elected government, a criminal misadventure that led to 11 top Reagan officials being convicted. Just for old time's sake, here are a few more golden chestnuts from Ronnie's tenure. James Watt, ketchup as a vegetable, Star Wars, a tax credit for segregated Bob Jones University, the SNL scandal, trees cause pollution, Grenada, William Casey, union busting, trickle-down economics, CIA sponsorship of Muslim radicals in Afghanistan, including one Osama bin Laden, Ed Meese, extensive cuts in programs serving poor people, Robert Bork, and the tripling of the national debt. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's give Reagan his due. All of it.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago. And they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call. And you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
You think I'd maybe had some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus on keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doug.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine. Really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing the various Supreme Court opinions that just came down, from a very important one that says that you can't be detained indefinitely without trial, without a lawyer. Only one justice, Clarence Thomas, supported the Bush administration's position on that. I won't want to talk about that at length. But there's at least a half dozen other opinions that are very important, some which I cited at the early part of this. And so I want to hear from you, 877-57-SCOOP. Which of these opinions did you think was most important? Which one affected you? Which one do you want to talk about? Which opinion do you think has the most likelihood of having an effect on your life, on American values? Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
This is Bert from Minnesota.
Hello, Bert from Minnesota. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Which Supreme Court opinion do you want to talk about?
The one where they restrict the right to sue HMOs.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. It's gotten very little attention based on, you know, the more important, well, I don't know if it's more important, based on the more publicized one about detainees. Tell me, what's your position on that?
Well, it's I'm against their decision, at least from what I know of it, but it was mainly just to set some things straight. It's not a matter of, you know, someone leaves a scalpel inside you, you can't sue the physician. The HMO who reimburses that physician, basically pays for that procedure, that's not their responsibility. So unless they hire a terrible surgeon, you know, they really shouldn't be held accountable.
All right, fair enough. But HMOs do make decisions all the time. Like, your pancreas is hurting and you want a new one, and the HMO says, sorry, you can't get one. I mean,
yes,
that would be a better case. All right.
The deal with that is that, you know, it normally takes a practitioner of medicine to say, okay, you have this symptoms, you need this procedure. And a doctor, someone who's trained in medicine, is the one who makes that decision. But what happens is, because of the costs of these procedures and tests and stuff are so high, and people are so, you know, usually don't carry around a spare $80,000, by denying the payment, they effectively limit care. And so what doctors have been wanting is for these people, for these agencies who are essentially practicing medicine, to take some of the responsibility for that and be able to be sued so that simply say, we're going to deny you this on the basis that it costs too much. If this patient has a medical need for it, then they need to open themselves up to litigation. Otherwise, they're going to just have no pressure not to just restrict care.
I also think they should have a medical license. I mean, if you're going to restrict care, I want to know that there's someone with that's an MD that's doing it, not just an insurance company.
They have specialized nurses who handle triage basically over the phone. But push comes to shove, you're absolutely right. The person who makes these kinds of decisions is not someone who has gone through medical school, who knows what, you know, a useless test is and what a very useful test is.
Well, thank you for your call, Bert. I think it is a very important decision. One thing I do want to talk about that decision, though, that I want people to understand, is that the Supreme Court makes two kinds of rulings, if you will. I mean, I guess you can put everything into two categories. They're the people that say that there are two kinds of people in the world, those that think there are two kinds of people in the world and those that don't. But notwithstanding that, the Supreme Court makes two different kinds of cases. One is its interpretation of ambiguous law. Congress will pass a law, and it's unclear what they meant, and it'll decide what they meant. And the other is its interpretation of the United States Constitution. The reason why these two cases are very important distinctions is that when the Supreme Court makes a ruling based on the United States Constitution, such as you cannot burn a flag, such as that the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution means that you cannot exclude blacks from white schools, when it makes an opinion based on the United States Constitution, the only way to overturn that opinion, as you know from your social studies textbook, is to pass a constitutional amendment, which is very difficult to do. It requires two-thirds of both houses of Congress. It requires three-quarters of the legislatures of the various states. When the Supreme Court makes a ruling based on the Constitution, it's very, very hard to do. That's, certainly when it ruled on Roe v. Wade, based on the Constitution, protecting a woman's right to choose. That's why conservatives are not trying politically to win two-thirds of Congress and three-quarters of legislatures. They know they cannot win that amount of popular support. They're just trying to get conservative presidents to appoint pro-life judges because they know it's easier to change the Supreme Court than it is to amend the Constitution. The reason why I'm bringing up all of this and why it's not off-topic from Bert's point about HMOs is that the court's ruling on HMOs, the court's ruling on HMOs was not based on the Constitution. It's based on a federal statute called ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income and Security Act, I believe is what the initials stand for. And this act passed in the 70s, I think it's fair to say, had no contemplation of HMOs whatsoever. HMOs didn't exist back in the late 60s, early 70s. The point of ERISA was to provide retirement plans for employees. It's an extremely long, complex piece of legislation. In fact, there are attorneys who focus entirely their specialty on ERISA, and they basically prepare employee benefit plans that include things like health care. And the point of the court's opinion was that since HMOs are largely provided by employers, you can't sue the HMOs. I don't know whether I agree with the court's logic, but my point is not that. My point is that since the court was ruling on a statute and not on the Constitution, this opinion can be overturned. A lot of people don't understand that. They think the only way to overturn a Supreme Court opinion is to have a constitutional amendment. Not true. True if it's based on the Constitution. But if it's based on a statute, as was the case when the court ruled that you can't sue HMOs based on this ERISA statute, all you have to do is get both houses of Congress and the President of the United States to change the law. Now, I'm confident that Republicans controlling the House and the Senate will not change the law. They don't want HMOs to be sued. HMOs give them a lot of money, and of course, HMOs, if you allow them to sue, patients will be protected, true, but HMOs will make less profits. And we all know that Republicans generally put profits over patients. So I don't think the law will be changed under President Bush. However, under President Kerry, a person who very much cares about health care, I think it's quite likely the law would be changed. If you get Kerry and both Democratic houses of Congress, there's no doubt in my mind this decision will be overturned. If you get Kerry in one House of Congress, well, it's close call. I don't know. So if you want to be able to sue HMOs, that's one more reason why you need to vote for the Democrats this fall. I do want to read an email that I got from Ben. Ben is clearly my most prolific conservative blogger, and I welcome his comments to the blog. I rarely agree with them, but I welcome his participation. I think he adds to the debate and that we need to have. Ben and I, though we disagree on most, apparently agree on the Electoral College. Ben writes in commenting on the gerrymandering opinions that I just discussed. Mark, I think we should do away with districts, actually the entire Electoral College system. No person's vote should be weighted heavier than another, and our current system does just this. Ben, for once we agree. For once we absolutely agree. I would get rid of the Electoral College. Ben does write, I was wondering if there were any positive attributes to our current system. Ben, I think the Electoral College, and for that matter, the Senate, you got to remember, you know, Wyoming, which has a smaller population, the District of Columbia, gets two senators, and California, which is about a tenth of the nation's population, gets also two senators. That's clearly not fair. But the Senate and Electoral College reflect back onto the founding of our country, when we really were 13 independent states. The colonies were independent states. They issued their own money. They had tariffs if you brought stuff from one state to another. They had their own troops. They banded together in the American Revolution. But they really were 13 independent states joining together. And, of course, historians know that the Senate came and the House came out of the Great Compromise, which was that every state would get two representatives in the Senate and the House would be reflective of population. Of course, with gerrymandering, the House is no longer reflective of population, which is a whole other problem. But I think that we've come a long way in 225 years. And I think that what differences we had among states, sure, we have differences among regions, but the idea of the state doesn't matter so much anymore. I don't know if people have so much more loyalty to Wyoming than Colorado. I think New Yorkers are more loyal to New York City than they are to New York State. I don't know that the states, I mean, we have so much already in terms of state power. We have state laws that, and I like that system. But in terms of the federal system, what controls the federal government, Ben, I think a lot of these things, it's time for them to go. And the Electoral College is absolutely first on my list. So you and I, we agree on that. I want to move on to the discussion, though. I want to talk about the Supreme Court opinion on detainees because it is a crucially important decision. I want to tell you why I think it's important, and I want to get your comments as well. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667, or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. I want to read from some of the court opinion in that very important decision. And you know, they're actually – there's more than one decision here, so it's a little bit complicated. There were decisions based on whether they're a citizen or not, whether they're on Guantanamo Bay or not. There was some decisions saying that you can declare an enemy combatant. But to me, the most important thing that the majority, indeed 8 of the 9 justices said, is that when George Bush said he could hold someone indefinitely without trial, he was dead wrong. That's against American values. And I want to read to you from some of the opinion. As Justice Sandra Day O'Connor wrote in a passage that 8 justices would agree with, it is during our most challenging and uncertain moments that our nation's commitment to due process is most severely tested. And it is in those times that we must preserve our commitment at home to the principles for which we fight abroad. Quote, we have long since made clear that a state of war is not a blank check for the president when it comes to the rights of the nation's citizens. The justices went way back to 1215. They quoted King John in the Magna Carta, which every lawyer, every really good democratic historian, everyone should know about the Magna Carta, where the first time the nobles, they didn't want to pay for the king's wars, in fact. And so they got some basic rights from the British king that have only been expanded. And the Magna Carta in 1215 says, quote, no free man should be imprisoned save by the judgment of his peers or by the law of the land, unquote. You got to have a law or a jury trial. So it's amazing that Prince George W. Bush felt he could have more power than King John of England. King John of England, you know, we've only gotten more due process since 1215. But George Bush apparently, and maybe it's because he wasn't elected, because he was chosen by the Supreme Court, he felt he could have more power than King John of Britain. Only Justice Clarence Thomas agreed with George Bush. And Thomas basically said, and this, well, not basically said, let me read you a direct quote. Thomas wrote, quote, "The breadth of the president's authority to detain enemy combatants is an authority that includes making virtually conclusive factual findings that the Supreme Court is powerless to second guess." Now wait just a minute, Clarence Thomas here. First of all, I think that anytime you have a virtually conclusive factual finding, we got a problem. I mean, I'm sure that we had factual findings, I would hope we did, that the people in Iraqi prisons in Abu Ghraib were guilty of something. Turns out we were wrong. The whole point, please, of an American system, what differs us from the Saddam Husseins, is the fact that our courts do second-guess the President of the United States. In fact, I would go back and say this principle is as old as the Bible, which you, Clarence Thomas, I would think would have some respect for. Did you know that way back 1,000 years before the Common Era, about 3,000 years ago, go back, read your Bible. Interesting stuff. The interesting history there. Book of Judges, Book of Samuel. There was a king, King David of Israel. And King David said he could do whatever he wanted. In fact, he sent a man named Naboth to the front. While he was there, took his vineyard. King David sent a man to the front, and while he was there, took his wife. What's interesting is that the prophets said, "Hey, king, you can't do this. You can't just steal a guy's vineyard. You gotta have a reason. You gotta have a law. You gotta have," they didn't call it then, "eminent domain. You gotta pay someone if you take his vineyard. You can't just steal." King Ahab and King David said, "Well, why not? I'm the king." And the prophet said, "Well, even the king has to follow a law." In that case, it was God's law. But the point is, the idea that kings are not all powerful, the idea that there is a higher law than the whim of a king, is older than King John. It's 3,000 years old. It even dates back to the Bible. Frankly, it's one of the great principles that have come out of religion. And it's amazing to me that George Bush, who's supposed to be so religious, didn't understand this basic principle. Yes, George, even presidents have to follow the law. When we come back, I want to talk more about this decision, and I want to hear from you. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Back with more right after this.
The Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The Service Employees International Union unanimously endorsed a resolution calling for an end to the U.S. occupation of Iraq. 4,000 delegates, who represent more than 1.6 million members, voted on the resolution at the union's national convention this past weekend. The resolution also asked that soldiers are provided with adequate veterans' benefits and health care. Many delegates said they voted for the resolution to promote the domestic needs of working people who make up the bulk of the armed services.
On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a code pink high top in partnership with the D.C.-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous. And she said, "Oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year." And I said, "Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date." Well, she had no answer for that.
The new sneakers can be purchased at nosweatsneaker.com.
Travelers seeking to cross the United States and Canadian border this weekend should expect added congestion. Canada Customs officers are creating a slowdown at the border to protest federal delays in reviewing pay claims. In 2000, the duties of some officers were expanded to give them the power of arrest. The union says there has been no pay raise to compensate for the added responsibility and risk. The officers are handing out leaflets to motorists explaining their position. Traffic at the border is expected to be heavy as Canada celebrates its Independence Day today. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Even with unemployment growing at a steady rate, it will be some time before working families get to share in the benefits of the new economy. The reason is the drop of real wages from an average of $15.81 per hour in November 2003 to $15.64 in May 2004. The last time wages were at that level was in November of 2001. The main culprit in the lack of wage growth is the residual effect of being in the longest jobless recovery on record. It will take many more months of steady job growth before employers are willing to reverse the trend.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing the various Supreme Court opinions that have just come down, the most important of which, in my mind, is the opinion by the United States Supreme Court that, quote, that the president cannot order, quote, the potentially indefinite detention of individuals who claim to be wholly innocent of wrongdoing, unquote. You'd think that would be a basic principle. You cannot indefinitely detain individuals who claim to be wholly innocent without trial, without law. You think that would be clear. Indeed, I got to say, I was proud there was an opinion signed by Justice Antonin Scalia and Justice John Paul Stevens, arguably the two wings of the court. I'm not a big fan of Scalia, but I've never said that he was stupid. And they wrote together the very core of liberty secured by our Anglo-Saxon system of separated powers has been freedom from indefinite imprisonment at the will of the executive. You know, it sounds so obvious. I thought it was obvious before this opinion. And yet, it's striking to me how the Bush administration kept arguing it. I mean, they argued, in fact, in the oral argument on this opinion. I want to read it directly here so I'm not misquoted. Let's find it here. I'm going to have to find the commercial. But basically what the Bush attorneys argued was that, hey, we can police ourselves. Don't worry. We'll be careful. We know what we're doing. We're the Bush administration. We're good guys. How ironic that seems after Abu Ghraib prison. I want to emphasize, though, that this is something new. There are people that go back to Abraham Lincoln when he suspended habeas corpus during the Civil War and say, well, this happens all the time. It doesn't happen all the time in wartime. In fact, even during the Civil War, when Congress approved Lincoln's immediate suspension of habeas corpus, they said that anyone that was detained still had to be indicted, okay? They still had to be charged with a crime, and they had to be in a place where the courts were open. Okay? They had to eventually have a trial. And if the courts were closed because there was so much war around, you could hold them until the courts opened again. But that was it. You had to give them a trial. And this is during the Civil War. This is when our very foundation as a nation is at stake. During the McCarthy era, even during the McCarthy era, the law said that if you detain someone, they have to have a hearing within 48 hours, and they have to have the opportunity to cross-examine witnesses with counsel to make a case for their release. In 1971, Congress felt that McCarthy-era law was too strict, and they just made a blanket prohibition. The president can never detain citizens without congressional authorization. Couldn't be clearer. In fact, when we worked on the Patriot Act, I should say, one of the decent things in the Patriot Act that we compromised on is that even with aliens, even with non-citizens, under the Patriot Act, you can't detain someone more than 7 days without giving them a chance to challenge their detention. It's impossible that Congress, which is giving non-citizens 7 days and is saying that the president can't detain at all citizens without a trial, an indictment, and lawyers, that somehow would give the president the right for this indefinite detention of citizens and non-citizens. And the Bush administration knew it had absolutely no power under the law to do this. So they said, well, it's under the Constitution. It's the inherent right of the president. He's our chief executive. He can do whatever he wants. He is the commander-in-chief. He has all these powers. And no president, even Abraham Lincoln in the middle of the Civil War, no president has ever made that argument. As I said, even King John didn't make that argument. I guess Saddam Hussein made that argument. But one of the things we have to remember is that treating these – I mean, they made all kinds of really crazy arguments suggesting that, you know, this is a limited time. Don't worry. When the war on terror is over, then we'll release these people. But as Senator Day O'Connor pointed out, this war on terror may go on forever, much as it did in 1984. And I've never really even understood the administration's argument. You can have lawyers with security clearances look into the cases. I can understand the argument that we don't want a public trial. I can understand that. I think it should be limited to extremely rare circumstances. But if someone holds nuclear secrets or something like that, sure, you don't want the public to have access to that information. But you can have lawyers who are true to their client, but even truer to our American system of justice, that have security clearances that could talk to Moussaoui. And what's interesting to me is that the British have this principle, even though they've had IRA terrorism for longer than the United States. Even the Israelis, who have far more severe terrorism than the United States or Britain, they have a law that says that detainees must have access to counsel to contest their status and must be brought before a court within 48 hours of their detention. And Israel obviously faces far worse acts of terrorism than the United States has faced. I mean, they every day, people go out into streets and restaurants and worry about their safety. In fact, the Israeli Supreme Court just ruled that the wall, the security fence that Israel wants to do is unfair, and they're telling the prime minister to move it in certain places. My point is that in other democracies, people recognize that a president's power is limited. And as Scalia said, and I don't usually agree with Scalia, if civil rights are to be curtailed during wartime, it must be done openly and democratically as the Constitution requires, rather than by silent erosion through an opinion of this court. So, you know, I don't think it could be clearer. And it's striking to me. I mean, do you remember these arguments they made? Listen to these arguments and tell me if you think that they're, you know, this is what makes people angry at lawyers. The Bush administration argued that if we put people in Guantanamo Bay, it's not covered by U.S. law. They argued that, well, Guantanamo Bay is in Cuba, and even though we have a permanent lease on Guantanamo Bay, it's not really controlled by us. So we control the territory enough to build a prison and put people there, but we don't control it enough to actually follow U.S. laws. It's really a very shocking thing for them to say. And so what's interesting is that I haven't found too many people actually support the Bush administration. In fact, I'd ask Ben or Jeremy or my other conservatives who listen in, is there anyone that supports the Bush administration position on this? As I said, this Supreme Court, as conservative as it is, as lawless as it was, putting Bush in power, even they realized how awful it would be to have a president who could unilaterally pick you up off the street, put you in jail for life, and not allow you to have access to accounts, to a lawyer, or to a trial. It's simply not the American way. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the other things that Supreme Court has done. Many of you have already written in to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. Keep writing in. I'm going to read some of your emails following the break. We've got emails on the opinion on internet porn. I got an email here on Senator Day O'Connor and the Bush v. Gore decision and other emails. You can also call in 877-57-SCOOP. Lines are open, 877-57-SCOOP. Let me know what you think about the various Supreme Court decisions that just came down. Back right after this.
Time for another Gooberhead Award, issued periodically to people in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's Goober goes to an organization that marches under the majestic banner of Move America Forward. MAF would have you believe that it's a nonpartisan mass movement of patriots supporting our troops and the commander-in-chief in the war on terrorism. But the majesty of this outfit shrinks to minuscule when you peek behind MAF's red, white, and blue curtain and see that it's nothing but three pathetic right-wingers with a Mr. Microphone. Move America Forward is a front group set up only last month by the Republican PR firm of Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, which pocketed some $2.5 million in payments from Republican politicians in the last election cycle. Far from being patriots, these hired flacks set up MAF to engage in a decidedly unpatriotic act of selectively canceling the First Amendment. What has their knickers in a knot is that Michael Moore's dynamite new movie, Fahrenheit 911, is being shown in theaters all across America. Apparently, Russo, Marsh, and Rogers don't believe in the principles of free speech and open debate, at least not if these principles allow open criticism of their beloved King George W. So these gooberheads launched MAF to trash Moore and try to prevent theaters from presenting his movie. On their website, they publish the addresses of major theater chains, asking rabid Bush supporters to deluge the chains with demands to shut out Moore. Tell the industry executives that we don't want this misleading and grotesque movie being shown in our local cinema, shriek the PR hacks. This is Jim Hightower saying, whether or not you like Moore, no true American can like this goofy, totally un-American stab at censorship. The best way to show up these goobers is to go see the movie and judge it for yourself. That's the American way.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation. It gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing the various Supreme Court decisions that have just come down. You know, the Supreme Court is interesting. It's the only body of the only part of our government that has to give a reason for what it does. This is very important. You know, I get asked all the time, hey, Mark, you know, you're constantly criticizing the Supreme Court for what they did installing President Bush. And, you know, I don't understand the law, and I don't really understand that opinion. But and okay, so you're a lawyer. But tell me this. How can you judge them? I mean, they have the power under the Constitution to make the final word under the Constitution. If you don't like it, pass a constitutional amendment. But, you know, quit whining. To which I respond, you know what? The Supreme Court is different from the president, from Congress. The president is elected, usually, except for in this recent case, usually elected by the American people. He has an agenda, or she, hopefully one day, will have an agenda. And he, or one day she, can do whatever they want within the bounds of the law. They can decide to support a tax cut or not, or to use agencies to do this, that, or the other. That's the president's role. They don't have to explain. They can just do it. Congress, same way. They can vote on a bill. They can repeal a bill. They can interpret a bill. That's the right of Congress. They can do that. But the Supreme Court is different. The Supreme Court is quite different. The Supreme Court has to give a reason for what it does. And that's, frankly, that dates back to the same precedents of the Bible, of the Jewish prophets and Great Britain. That dates way back because people understand that if people don't give a reason for what they do, how can they overturn what the king does? I mean, that's the heart of what jurisprudence is all about, right? So the Supreme Court has to give a reason. They can't just say, oh, we disagree. We agree. That doesn't make them legitimate. They are supposed to be interpreting the United States Constitution. And interpreting the United States Constitution, they can't just say, well, you know, I support this because I'm right. If their opinion has no merit, if it's not based on law, then it is precisely open government. It's precisely our role as lawyers, as citizens, to see what they're doing and to say they're wrong. And so that's why I think it's not only justified, it is incumbent upon Americans to criticize the United States Supreme Court at the appropriate time. Let me read from some of the emails I've gotten. And if you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, and you can be heard on these issues. Gordon writes, does the due process judgment finally give the extraterrestrials held in Area 51 their day in court? Short answer, Gordon, yes. Yes, the people held in Guantanamo Bay will finally get their day in court. It may be a long way away, but they'll finally get it. I also got a comment on the blog, this from Rod, referring to the decision of 2000, that as he understood it, Sandra Day O'Connor was going to retire based on Bush's election, and that upon hearing that Gore won Florida, she got upset that she would not be able to retire. That's exactly right, Rod. That's exactly right. Everything you say is exactly right. It's been reported. Sandra Day O'Connor, upon hearing that Gore won Florida, walked out of the room disgusted, and her husband actually was left to explain to the people at this election party why she was so upset. She only wanted to retire if a Republican would be appointed in her place, and so she was very upset when she heard that Gore had won Florida, because everyone knew once he won Florida, he'd won the election. So that is absolutely right. I read another comment here, this one by Ryan, and Ryan asked that, trying to listen to both sides, he heard Rush Limbaugh say that in recounts done by many major newspapers in Florida, that Bush would have still won even if the recount had been done. Well, that's wrong. And let me explain exactly what's right and what's wrong, because that goes through a lot. The New York Times and other newspapers have counted up the votes. And under every circumstance, based on Florida law, Gore wins. The reason is that the Florida Supreme Court held that everyone's vote had to be counted. Now, the papers also looked at what would happen if Gore's position that he had the first day after the election, that was later changed to a week later, if what Gore's position would be, if we just counted a few counties, what would matter then? Let me explain. Let me back up. After the election, when Florida's vote was unclear, you have to go and you have to challenge within 48 hours every one of the counties where you have a challenge based on Florida law. And Al Gore and his advisors decided in that 48 hours they didn't have the people on the ground to challenge everywhere, and they thought it would look bad if they went everywhere. So they just went to the counties where they knew there were major problems, and people accused Gore of cherry-picking counties. So he went to four counties. That would be Broward, Dade, Volusia, and Palm Beach, and challenged in those counties. And the later recounts show that if only the four Gore-picked counties were chosen, that under those standards, Bush would still have won. However, within a week after Gore made that decision, when people were accusing him of cherry-picking the counties, he said, you know what, let's count all the counties of Florida. And he asked Bush to agree to let him count all the counties of Florida. The Bush campaign said, absolutely not. We cannot count the votes. If we count all the votes in Florida, our guy won't win. We know that from exit polls. They didn't quite say that, but that's what they were thinking. They did say, we won't accept your offer to count the entire state of Florida. When it went to the Florida Supreme Court, the Florida Supreme Court also said, you can't just cherry-pick the counties. The only fair way to do a recount is to recount the entire vote in all of Florida. And that's the vote that everyone has found Gore would win by a substantial number of votes. Now, the Supreme Court then overruled the Florida Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court said, look, the Florida Supreme Court may be counting everything fairly, but we don't have time to figure it out, and therefore we're going to stop the vote count because Florida's law is hopelessly unconstitutional, and therefore by this law that's hopelessly unconstitutional, We're going to take the interim vote count, even though we recognize it's not accurate or complete, and therefore Bush wins, and please don't carefully read this opinion. That's the essence of the U.S. Supreme Court opinion. So when Rush Limbaugh says, oh, Bush would have won even if they'd all been counted, no, not true. He might have won if only the four Gore counties had been counted, but no one, including Al Gore, advocated that position within a week after the election. Florida law says the whole state had to be counted, and that's the position that Gore held later. And if you count all the votes, it's clear Gore wins by a lot. In fact, if you count the votes that weren't even at issue, the 10,000 votes in Palm Beach County where people accidentally voted for Pat Buchanan instead of Gore because of the illegal butterfly ballot, if you care about the blacks that were kicked off the voting rolls as felons, even though they weren't felons, if you care about the people that voted for Gore and Lieberman and whose votes were rejected as double votes, all of that makes Gore win by tens of thousands of votes. So I just had to make that clear. I also got an opinion on the internet porn decision, and I think it's a very good point. The person points out that let me just read. This is from John, and John writes, regarding the anti-porn bill, there was a concern that this would restrict access to other sexually explicit materials that children might want to see. And remember that these are the same people that are preaching abstinence only as the only sexual education that they can receive. You know, to me, this shows the problem with all of this. It's not just abstinence only, but this all this idea of you got to protect children. It seems clear to me that the entire purpose of this bill had nothing to do with protecting children, but had to do with protecting adults. As even Justice Kennedy found, you want to protect children, you can have filters. Right? All you do is you have filters. Filters, interestingly enough, they protect children, right? Parents can buy them. I'd even support Congress passing a law subsidizing filters for parents. If parents want to protect children, all they have to do is install a filter, and like I said, Congress could even make that free. It wouldn't be that hard to pay a software developer, you know, a couple million dollars, probably less, to have a international filter that would restrict use for children. But that's not what they wanted. We know what they wanted. They don't want adults listening to porn, watching porn on the internet. They don't want it, right? After all, it does not make sense. If your goal is to protect children, you support filters. The law that Congress passed, which would have criminal penalties for looking at porn on the internet, didn't restrict international porn, because it didn't have the power. Congress cannot criminalize somebody in Germany sending porn to us. So the law that Congress had would have protected children less than filters. Why do they want it? Well, it's very clear. As John points out, these are the people that don't want any sex education for children or adults. They don't want people to look at porn. They think porn's bad. Well, you know, I'm not defending porn. But what I'm saying is, if people want to look at naked pictures, adults want to do it, you know, leave them alone. Get out of our lives. You know, apparently porn is the most profitable thing on the internet anyway. But I think the Supreme Court clearly made the right decision. It was not about children at all. One last thing that we haven't talked about, the Pledge of Allegiance case. I just got to put in my two cents on that. I think that the Supreme Court rejected the Pledge of Allegiance case, as they did based on the fact that the father who brought the suit didn't have custody of the daughter. This sort of non-issue as to the question of whether the Pledge of Allegiance should include under God, I think they did that because they wanted to dismiss the case, but they didn't have a good reason to do so. And so they had to find this minor decision. But the case will not go away, folks. And I don't think there's anyone that can justify the words under God being in the Pledge of Allegiance. I realize that 80, 90% of Americans want it there. And I have to say, I'm sorry, 80, 90% of Americans, you're wrong. You're wrong. God belongs in churches. It does not belong in a state-ordained prayer. And the Pledge of Allegiance shouldn't be a prayer. And it seems to me, frankly, the Pledge of Allegiance, there's not that much in it anyway. If I had my druthers, I would have everyone read the preamble to the United States Constitution. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, that preamble, and I don't have time to say the whole thing, to me that really states our secular sacredness, our secular constitution. That is the the document that should be holy for all Americans. We all may worship different gods, but I say that as Americans, we should respect and have respect for the Constitution of the United States. That's why we have a right to criticize the Supreme Court. That's why I have a right to be on air right now without John Ashcroft pulling me away. And frankly, it's a lot of the source of my patriotism. And although there's no show tomorrow, I'm off tomorrow, Friday, my show on Sunday, July 4th, is going to be dealing with patriotism. What is the source of your patriotism? Where does patriotism come from? What acts are patriotic? What acts are not patriotic? I hope as you're driving to see the fireworks on Sunday, July 4th, you'll tune into my show at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. Check out the show before you see the fireworks, because I think it's really important to reflect on what it means to be an American and what it means to be a patriotic American. So, no show tomorrow. I'll see you on July 4th. Happy Independence Day, everyone.